that's right. We're right back here. And as promised, I have on the phone with me this morning Lady Therese Robinson. She's up awful early. She just told me the moon is out. Yes, I believe she's calling us from California. How you doing today, Lady Therese?
I'm good, Anne. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Absolutely. You know, I was reading over some of the information about you, and one of the things I find amazing is that you just decided to leave England, where you had grown up and had been raising two sons with your husband, and just move on over to California. What brought that idea to your head?
Well, you make it sound so simple. In fact, in some ways it was. I came to America and I just fell in love with the energy of the place. I've always loved American music. I'm a huge Elvis fan. And country music I love. And I just came here and I felt like it was home.
Wait a minute. You moved to California. If you'd moved to Nashville, Tennessee...
Well, I have danced the day away, right, in Nashville, Tennessee. I love it. It's Well, I didn't have any choice on which part of America. I just wanted to get to America. I don't know. The universe suddenly delivered an opportunity, mostly for my husband. And I just thought we're going to grab this because that's the place I need to be. I need to be near the ocean, and I need to feel that energy. I was just about to turn 50, and I don't know if any of your listeners are familiar with that, you know, when you're just facing that big birthday and you feel a sense that life, you know, is for living.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Know what you're talking about. So how difficult was it to make this big leap?
It was, I'm going to sound very new age, I think, in what I'm going to say. It was actually quite remarkable. It was very easy. As soon as we had I came to Malibu and I walked along the beach and I just had this sense that I was meant to be here. And not that I live in Malibu, but, you know, I needed to be close to the ocean. And I was walking along the beach and I just had this certainty. I thought, why am I in England? I'm meant to be here. And we went back to England, and I was a little low, and everybody in the family said, oh, for heaven's sake, pull yourself together. We can go on holidays. And then this opportunity came, and we leapt at it and said yes. And then everything that should have been difficult was easy. We sold our house pretty much the day we put it on the market. We found one the day, literally the first house I looked at. We're still in it 13 years later. It was as if it was meant to be. I think when you're on the right path, something just tells you, just keep going. It was a good journey. It was quite easy.
Quite easy. That's amazing. You know, I would have thought that your kids and your husband would have told you, stiff upper lip, dear. Get on with the program here in England.
No, they were up for... They'd lived with me for a long time. And they'd traveled a fair bit. They were up for the adventure.
Well, you know, I think that brings up a lot of good points, you know, that when you're in the right place at the right time and you're able to take advantage of it. But I think one of the most difficult things for people is to realize that an opportunity is there and they should take it if they want to change their life.
I think that's right. And also, you know, there is fear. I'll tell you a very quick story. When I moved really quickly, and it took about 6 months, and everything went really well, including getting the right visas, arrived on time. Everything just felt like it was meant to be. And I woke up on the first day here and went straight to the hairdressers because, you know, I don't know how important that is to you, but to me it's vital.
It makes you feel like a
And I went
woman.
To the hairdressers and I sat still, probably for the first time in months, and I suddenly was terrified. And the woman sitting next to me under a dryer turned to me and she said, because I must have been speaking to the hairdresser, and she said, are you English? And I said, yes. She said, my husband's English. I said, really? She said, yes. She said, what are you doing here? And we chatted. And I told her, you know, we'd just moved and that first morning. And she said, well, look, if you ever need a friend, here's my card. And she handed it to me. And the card said, feel the fear and do it anyway. And it was Susan Jeffers, who I don't know if you're familiar with her book, but she sold something like 23 million copies worldwide of that book. And I just, she became a good friend. She passed away last year, but she became a good friend. And it made me realize that reading that book really helped me fight through what then was fear. And I think fear keeps people back. And I think we need resources to deal with fear.
You know, one of the things, speaking of fear and everything, it is in the economy that we live in, it is very scary to try to go out on a limb because we just don't feel the freedom to do some of the things that we used to feel that we had.
Exactly. I mean, I don't think that you need to take a huge leap to make a little change in your life, though. You know, the way we're talking about it, it sort of sounds like I came here and then everything stopped. It's actually process. I came here and started to write, and then in the writing discovered that I had a talent, and, you know, I wasn't making any money from it, but I just kept doing it as a hobby. So I think even when we're in a time when we haven't got a lot of money, and by the way, we didn't have a lot of money moving here. I did take a risk. I think it's difficult for people, but I think when things are difficult, you have to be kind to yourself.
Well, you know, I agree. We should be kinder. Do you still have tea in the afternoon?
I'm sorry, Anne, the line is quite...
Okay, I was asking, do you still have tea in the afternoon, afternoon tea?
Yes, we have cups of tea all day long. We don't make it a ceremony in the afternoon, but yes, we do have cups of tea and chocolate biscuits.
Yeah, well, good, okay. Now, what are some of the other things that you think that reinventing ourselves, do you think, you know, they're always talking about in business anymore, that nobody should expect to have the same career day in and day out for 30 or 25, 30, 35 years. Now we should be expected to change our careers. What do you think about in our personal life? Should it change like that too?
Yes, I think just being alive is a process of constant change. I think we're all changing in little ways and bigger ways all the time. Sometimes the little ways, like even getting your hair into a different style, or the bigger ways of having a family, I think we're constantly adapting and changing. And sometimes when we're forced to do something, that's when, you know, we think it's dreadful. We've been made redundant. I know so many people who have been in a situation where everything just looks so bleak, and then a year later, they've forced themselves to push through a barrier, and then somehow they've grown in the process. So I do believe there's always something we can do. I write about people who are at a point of change in their lives. You know, in Letter from Paris, I have a character who's going through a trauma in her marriage. I have somebody else whose career is on the rocks. I have somebody whose biological clock is ticking away, but they're not married. So I love exploring these issues, some of which have happened to me in my life. You know, I'm 62, so it's, you know, not all plain sailing. And I love to work through that, the idea that, you know, you've got a challenge and you have no money and you're broke. What do you do? How do you deal with that?
Absolutely. You know, I think when you look at Joan Rivers as a comedian and what she broke through and what she brought to the world is a great example. I love what she said. She said that you're never too old to do what you love.
I think that's right. And Joan Rivers, I mean, I loved her. And she, I watched a biography program of, I can't remember what it was, she and Melissa. And, you know, really, she had some serious hard knocks along the way. Mm-hmm. And what she did was to just keep doing what she did, and she'd take anything. I mean, she would have gone anywhere as long as she was working. And I think that's the important thing. I came to America, and I have worked really hard since I've been here. You know, I don't sit on a sun lounger all day and, you know, think, oh, what a wonderful, blissful life. You don't. You know, what makes life valuable is working for other people, giving back. It all sounds like a cliche when I say it, but I really do believe that we owe it to ourselves to be the best we can be and help other people as well.
We do, but sometimes it's hard to make those first steps. What would you say to any of our listeners that were listening out there that are in this quandary, they want to do something different, but they just don't feel that they have the freedom. They have too many responsibilities. They've got kids. They've got a mortgage. They've got a job, all these type of things. What would you say to them?
I would say if it's humanly possible to get up just 20 minutes earlier than you usually do and use that 20 minutes for yourself, you would be amazed at the miracles that will happen for the rest of the day. I think that one of the problems that we have is not taking a little bit of time out for ourselves. If you've got children, you know, I know what it's like to be running around with no help and have children and trying to get them to school and have a job to go to and then come back and have to worry about a husband or no husband or whatever. In the middle of that, there's a chance you're neglecting yourself. And I think it's important, really important, to just take 10 minutes out and just do something for yourself.
I think, you know, we used to have that commercial. I don't know if you ever heard this one, Calgon, take me away. You know, and that was all about women taking that 10, 15, 30 minutes away from everybody else.
Yes, I think so. I think there's too much noise. And I mean, I could do a plug for my book, which would sound horribly wrong. But I also think that, you know, reading or watching, just listening to music, it's something that you just do for yourself makes you feel so much better, because it's not all about everybody else and it's not all about problems. And if we, you know, stop long enough, just long enough to look around us, you know, you were saying at the beginning about the moon, and I'm looking up at it still, and I cannot remember the last time I was out on my porch looking at the moon at 6:30 in the morning. And getting on this program terrified me. You know, I'm a writer. I'm not a radio, I'm not a radio personality. I think you just got to try and challenge yourself.
Well, that's true, and I think that sometimes you can give a whole lot more when you're selfish enough to take a few minutes for yourself.
Yes.
I think so. Yeah.
Have you reinvented yourself, Anne, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, yes. I own a jewelry store. I still own a jewelry store with my husband. And back in 2007, my husband decided we were buying a radio station because I was a good talker. And I punched him and I said, why did you do this? And he said, because you're a good talker. And so I've been in the radio business since 2007. No background, no anything, just kind of happened. And,
well, you're an inspiration to everybody.
Well, thank you very much. Now, your books, you've written two of them. Are you working on a third one?
I am, yes. I mean, that's the thing, writers write. You have to keep doing it. It's a discipline. It doesn't feel too much of a discipline, because once you start, getting started is the problem.
Absolutely.
You have to sit down. You have to turn up.
Well, now, your first book was what? India's Summer.
India's Summer. The character that I've written about in Letter from Paris, the recent book, and the first one, India's Summer, the character is India Butler, and she's going through a major life change. She's about to turn 40, and she's single, and she's not sure what she's going to do with her life. And in the process of to fight through her fears, she does a firewalk, which is something that I have done. I don't know if you've ever done one, Anne.
No,
but
I have
you
not.
Run across 30 feet of burning coals, and after that you feel you can do anything.
Would you recommend this to me?
Sorry?
I said, would you recommend me do a firewalk?
Absolutely, I would. I really would. I've done two of them. I did one for charity in England, and the funny thing was I organized it, and the night before somebody said to me, so are you going first? And I thought, no. My job was to organize it, to get the whole thing set up, and then cheerlead all of you. And then I realized, no, I have to do this as well, and yeah, I probably have to go first. So it was terrifying, absolutely terrifying. But my feet literally didn't touch the ground as I ran across the cold.
You were moving so fast.
I was running so fast. But at the other end, I mean, my feet didn't touch the ground for about a month because I couldn't believe I'd done it. And you feel like you can do anything. It's, yeah, I don't know where you go to do them. I know Tony Robbins does them in America, but yeah, I would recommend that or a bungee jump or something. My characters always challenge themselves with something major.
and the challenges that they go through, have you done these challenges that you write about?
Yes, some of them.
Okay. All right. So you've written two books. The third book, is it going to be the continuation, or have you branched off into a different direction?
No, this time I have different characters. In Letter from Paris, I have the same character, Enda Butler, who's now back in England, back in that rut that she was in at the beginning of the first book, really, but having grown a lot. And there's another character who is Luella, who's just discovered that her husband isn't quite what she thought he was. And there's somebody else who's Sarah, who's at a point where she wants a baby, but she's not married. And it's about how these characters interweave and the adventures that they end up having because of how they meet. And the next book that I'm writing, I think is a completely different one. It's a work in process. But three women. I'm very interested in women and how we think, what the challenges we face, how we move our lives on. And I think, if I may say it myself, people have said that when they read my book, they feel like they're in the place I'm writing about. And I write about Paris, so if you feel like you want to go to Paris vicariously, then the Letter from Paris is probably the way to go.
Absolutely. Well, listen, you also do a blog, right?
I do. Yes. Therese Blogs.com. It's T-H-E-R-E-S-E. My name is Therese, but it's funny. I didn't want to use my second name because my husband's quite well known. That's why we have the knighthood. And I wanted to know that I could do this on my own. So it's Therese and Therese Blogs.
.com. That's right. So you write about the same things in your blog?
No, I write about life in LA and generally the a quirky look on what's happening around me. That when I had the children still at home, I drafted a book that never got published called How to Stay Upwardly Mobile When You're Spinning Out of Control. I think they're really just very short pieces which take a light look on things that are happening to us all.
Sure.
Observations, that kind of thing. I don't take myself too seriously, or I try not to.
Well, how does it feel to be Lady Therese, though?
If I say it myself, I wear it very lightly. I don't go around with the title, but it has been a great honor because it was a reflection of work that I did with my husband, and it really gave me a sense that it had been recognized that what we'd done all the years that we had put in working so hard on behalf of education and charities and not-for-profits, it was a great marker, a lovely accolade, a lovely way to think, oh, that was valued, you know?
That's I can appreciate that. Today, there's a picture of me in our local paper. Me and Senator Floyd Nicholson, they gave me a commendation from the South Carolina State Senate for all the interviews and whatnot that I do, and it does. It makes you feel, well, somebody noticed that there was something going on.
Congratulations. Yes, that's absolutely right. And it is. It's a lovely feeling. You hear people at awards ceremonies, don't you, who's saying, I'm accepting this on behalf, and they read out a list of the people supporting them. And sometimes it sounds like maybe, oh, that's just what people do, but you do. You work as a team. You build things around you. And if somebody acknowledges it, it's a lovely feeling. It's a validation, isn't it?
Absolutely, it is. It is. Well, listen, the book is Letter from Paris. Her first book was
India Summer.
India Summer. And how do people go about getting the book?
Oh, you can get it anywhere you buy books. It's out on, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kindle. You can get it direct from any of those places, or you can go to my blog, therese.blogs.com, and just click on the icon there.
That's right. And you just use your first name when you're writing. Is that correct?
I do. And as I said, that's because my second name is kind of famous, and I wanted to know that any success I had from this, which I'm doing on my own, was purely for me, that I'd done it all by myself.
Well, congratulations on your successes. And thanks so much for calling us today, Lady Therese.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Anne, for having me on the show.
All right. You have a good one. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. That's right here on WCRS. Yes, that's Lady Therese Robinson. Her books, A Letter from Paris and India Summer, both just using her first name, Therese, T-H-E-R-E-S-E. She also does a blog, TherezBlogs.com. So check them out. I think I'm going to have to check out her blog and see what a lighthearted look on living in California is about.